Well, good morning, TNC family. From my home to wherever you are on this first Sunday of November, as we continue to pray for wisdom and safety and peace in the middle of this pandemic, 2 days before Election Day. And I also pray that you are staying enormously devoted to these scriptures and taking full advantage of these teachings and staying connected at TNC through our Zoom groups, and if you're within driving distance, through our church gathering each Sunday morning outdoors, socially distanced on the porch, because we're having a wonderful time of prayer and discussion and laughing and loving and learning each week. Now today, to lead us into the scriptures, will you pray with me the prayer of the psalmist in Psalm 57. Be gracious to me, O God, for my soul takes refuge in you. In the shadow of your wings, I take refuge. For you are the God who holds me together, makes good on his word, and delivers me from my enemies. Therefore, I will exalt you, O God, above the heavens, and declare your glory in all the earth. For my heart is steadfast. I will sing your praises and awaken to the dawn. I will awaken to your glory. Amen. Well, I want to start with this, a parable by the 20th century Harvard-trained sociologist Irving Zola. Once upon a time, you and a friend are having a picnic by the side of the river, when suddenly you hear a shout from the direction of the river, where you glance and see that a child is drowning. So without thinking, you both dive in, grab the child, and swim to shore. But before you can recover, you hear another child cry for help. So you and your friend jump back in the river to rescue her as well. Then another struggling child drifts into sight, and another, and the two of you can barely keep up, when suddenly you see your friend wading out of the water, leaving you alone. "Where are you going?" you shout. Your friend answers, "I'm going upstream to tackle the guy who's throwing these kids in the water." The end. Because you can respond and react to problems downstream, or you can get upstream and prevent problems before they happen. Which is why Benjamin Franklin famously said, "An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure." And which is the topic of an entire book published this year by Dan Heath called Upstream, in which he tells this parable, and in which in the first chapter he tells the story of his parents who in 2013 had burglars break into their house in College Station, Texas. He writes, "My parents were taking a walk around the neighborhood, and while they were gone, the burglars kicked in the back door and stole a wallet, 2 iPhones, and some jewelry. So my parents filed a report with the police. But unfortunately, the thieves were never caught. The downstream response failed," he writes. And then he writes suggestions for what may have prevented the burglary altogether. Quote, "Seconds before, a deafening alarm. Minutes before, the visible evidence of an alarm system, signs, stickers, cameras, warning of surveillance. Hours before, a more palpable police presence in the neighborhood. Months before, if the thieves had been arrested previously, they might have been enrolled in certain kinds of behavioral therapy that can break the cycle of recidivism. years before. Since no kid grows up aspiring to burglarize homes, create a community context where theft seems pointless because of the plentiful opportunities available. Minutes before, hours before, months before, years before, upstream of the burglary. Which leads me to this. So often in life, TNC, we get stuck in a cycle of response. We put out fires. We respond to emergencies. We deal with problems one after the other. But we never get around to fixing the systems upstream that caused the problems downstream. Which is why in our culture, we spend more time, money, energy, and effort unclogging blocked arteries, replacing broken hips, correcting impaired vision, rehabilitating alcoholics, resolving relational conflict, replacing talented employees who leave, developing therapeutics, and paying too much interest, i.e. downstream problems, rather than upstream efforts aimed to prevent those problems from happening in the first place. Which leads me to this, TNC. It's November 1 today, 61 days till the new year. And my hope and my prayer and my desire for you and me is that at the start of 2021, we don't have fires to put out and paperwork to catch up on and problems to mitigate downstream, but instead we have momentum to build on. I'm saying, what if we weren't drowning financially in January because we went upstream today? What if we weren't drifting spiritually because we went upstream today? What if we weren't aching physically because we went upstream today? What if we weren't struggling socially because we went upstream today? What if we could go upstream this November and December and solve problems before they strike? Well, I believe we can. And here's a way to do it, based in the work of psychologist Gary Klein, who has famously developed something called a pre-mortem. You know, you've probably heard of a post-mortem, when coroners and physicians examine a dead body to determine the cause of death. But Klein famously coined the term pre-mortem, shifting the exam from after to before. And the idea is, suppose you or your family or your place of work or your unit or division or your church are about to embark on a project. Klein says, okay, but before the project begins, convene for a pre-mortem and assume it's 61 days from now or 18 months from now. And the project was a complete disaster. Convene a pre-mortem and ask, what went wrong? And here's the key. By imagining failure in advance, thinking through what might cause failure, you can anticipate some of the potential problems and avoid them once the actual project begins. And so that's what I want to do today, friends. I want to do a pre-mortem on the next 61 days. So imagine with me that it's January 1, 2021, and you are in the water downstream reacting to a lot of problems in your life and saying, wow, November and December were not very good months. What went wrong? Why did November and December go badly? Imagine that. Because I want to talk to you now about four reasons rooted on the foundation of the scriptures that you are now further downstream. Four reasons you're reacting and trying to recover rather than upstream building on momentum. And I want to put these four reasons in the context of four things you might say in 61 days if you're dealing with problems downstream. And all four start with this phrase, I wish I had. I wish I had. And here's number one. The first thing you might say in 61 days if you are dealing with problems downstream. Number one, I wish I had paid more attention to my attentions. I wish I had paid more attention to my attentions. Because what you pay attention to, TNC, will drive your life. Your attitudes and your anxieties, your aspirations and your actions and your outcomes. In the words of the Apostle Paul, who wrote to the church at Rome, those whose lives are filled with discord, jealousy, anger, divisions, and factions have their minds set on those things. But those whose lives are filled with love, joy, peace, patience, and the like have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. Both outcomes, Paul says, have to do with your attentions, which is why it jumped out at me the other day, something Denzel Washington actually tweeted in conversation with some folks commenting on our current culture. Quote, think about a red car and you'll spot a red car. Think about opportunities and you'll spot opportunities. Think about reasons to be mad and you'll spot reasons to be mad. You become what you constantly think about, he tweeted. And the Apostle Paul would totally agree. And in 61 days, if you're looking back on a less than stellar November and December, there's a good chance it'll be because you paid attention to the wrong things. On my daily 2-mile walk a couple weeks ago, I listened to an interview between sports talk radio personality Colin Cowherd and mental conditioning coach Trevor Moad. Moad has worked with Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, Alabama football coach Nick Saban, UGA coach Kirby Smart, Texas A&M coach Jimbo Fisher, rapper Drake, Olympian Usain Bolt, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Sports Illustrated a couple years ago called Moad, quote, the world's best brain trainer. And Moad published a book in February of this year called It Takes What It Takes, How to Think Neutrally and Gain Control of Your Life. And the idea behind It Takes What It Takes is that facts are agnostic. It's not about whether or not you want to believe in the facts or not. Facts are facts. And facts are what you pay attention to will drive your life. And so Moad encourages people he trains to, quote, stay away from cable news channels. I'm not making it up. It's what he says. Stay away from radio shows and podcasts designed to inflame and anger. And nothing personal against Sam Hunt, but stay away from sad country songs. Life is hard enough even when we don't choose to bombard our senses with negativity. Instead, he says, watch shows that make you laugh or cheer. Consume news that deals in facts, not opinions. Listen to songs that lift you up instead of dragging you down. He goes on, so many people think that what makes an athlete great is things they do, but what makes an incredible athlete, particularly someone like Russell Wilson, is what he is not willing to do, what he doesn't go to on his phone, what he doesn't eat, how late he doesn't stay up, what he doesn't say. I'm still quoting, quote, negativity in any form is poison. Don't pay attention to things that will weaponize us against ourselves. And in this interview, He cites all kinds of scientific data from the Mayo Clinic to the Cleveland Clinic about how negative thinking is more powerful than positive thinking, and 3 minutes of cable news before 9 a.m. increases your probability by 27% of saying you had a bad day, according to the University of Pennsylvania. Pay attention to your attentions, he says. And yet, most people don't. For example, they have no idea how much time they spent watching TV last week. They think it's 10 to 15 hours. Turns out it's 28 hours, according to the Nielsen report. They have no idea how many miles they walk in a day. They think it's about 4 miles. Turns out it's closer to 2. They have no idea how many calories they consume in an average day. According to International Food Information Council Foundation, only 12% pay attention to their calories. And I'm just saying, new community, if you're downstream come January 1, you might look back on November and December and say, I wish I had paid more attention to my attentions. And especially, let me say here, I think we'll wish we had paid more attention to God's intentions. You know, we paid a lot of attention to the promises of politicians, but not to the promises of God. We paid a lot of attention to who we did not eat Thanksgiving dinner with, but we missed out on sharing a meal with the divine. We paid a lot of attention to what we couldn't do this Christmas, gifts, decorations, parties, etc. But we missed out on the arrival of Jesus, born in a manger, born into our world, born into our hearts. Now, contrast downstream attention with upstream attention. The downstreamer pays attention to something that has already happened upstream, over there, back there, or maybe even hopes that in the future another problem won't drift on by. And downstream thinkers, they're great at identifying problems and talking about problems and posting and tweeting about problems. But listen, upstream folks pay attention to, listen to this, the moment that they are in. They don't pay an abundance of attention to past events or to future events, only to this moment. They don't stress about that first quarter interception or that fumbled last drive. They don't beat themselves up over those words they wish they had not spoken or that decision that turned out badly. And they don't just tell themselves, well, the future's gotta turn out better. Instead, they pay attention to this moment, this play, this conversation, the people and things and activities and priorities of this moment. And if in January you feel like you're dealing with a bunch of downstream problems, if on January 1, 2021, you're saying, yikes, November and December were bad months, you might then say, I wish I had paid attention to my attentions. And here's number two, the second thing you might say in 61 days if you're dealing with problems downstream. Number two, I wish I had been more generous. I wish I had been more generous. Because the generous life is the wide open, expansive life. And the science is overwhelming on this too. In the words of Notre Dame sociologist Christian Smith, who received a $5 million grant to study the science of generosity and then wrote a definitive work called The Paradox of Generosity on the impact of generosity on the lives of people, quote, it turns out that in every dimension studied, in your happiness, in your physical health, in having a purpose for living, in the avoidance of depression, in personal growth, even in earning potential, Generous people are enriched in every way, and ungenerous people are diminished in every way. Which is why, friends, a kind, generous-hearted person living in Seattle is happier than a selfish person living in Florida, because climate and weather have less to do with happiness than generosity. And which is why an older person who volunteers and serves is probably more content than a younger person who selfishly looks out for their own interest. Because age and beauty have less to do with happiness than generosity. Which is why John Wesley, the English theologian and founder of the Methodist Church, wrote that the key to the good life was, quote, do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. And his life backed up his words. Famously, Wesley, who early in his life had a salary of £30 per year, lived on 28 and gave 2 to the church. And when his salary was increased to £50 per year, he still lived on 28 and gave 22 to the church. And when his salary was increased to £100 a year, he lived on 28 and gave 72 to the church, because Wesley understood what Jesus taught in Luke chapter 6. Give and you'll receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over, poured into your lap. And then Jesus says this, the amount you give will determine the amount you get back. And listen to the writer of Proverbs chapter 11. The world of the generous gets larger and larger. The world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. The one who blesses others is abundantly blessed. Those who help others are helped themselves. Listen to this. I voted early last week, and while at the voting location, an elderly lady, white hair, worn hands, was sitting behind a desk, checking IDs and entering things into computers. And I said to her, thank you so much for doing this for all of us. And she said, I do it every 2 years, and I love doing it, meeting folks and learning a little about them. And while we were waiting for the computer to process, she asked me how long I had lived in Georgia, and where I was from. And when I told her Asheville, North Carolina, she commented on the mountains and the Biltmore House. And her generous spirit was obviously intertwined with her joy. And there's a new family involved in our TNC community these days. And I asked them to volunteer not long ago, and they said yes. And then I later received this text, quote, David, thank you for inviting us to serve. I want to be more involved than just showing up on Sundays. I really appreciate you including us in this serving opportunity. Now, contrast downstream giving with upstream giving. The downstreamer thinks of the math. Well, if I give, what will I lose? How much can I afford to part with? Let me look at the math of my situation. But upstream folks think about sowing and reaping. If I plant some money or some time or some words here, how will it grow? If I can advance this cause and strengthen that network, what will expand and what more and who more can I be connected with and a part of? And I'm just saying, friends, if in January you feel like you're dealing with a bunch of downstream problems, if on January 1, 2021, you're saying, yikes, November and December were bad months, you might say then, I wish I had been more generous. to friends or family or church or charities or neighbors. I wish I had been more generous. And here's number three. The third thing you might say in 61 days if you're dealing with problems downstream. Number three, I wish I had not tried to go it alone. And I'm going to be quick on this point, but let me tell you, the biggest thing you have working in your favor over the next 61 days, it's other people. I'm serious. Don't do it on your own. Lean into others, because when you get the power and encouragement and unconditional love of others on your side, I will almost guarantee you that you will surpass whatever limit you are currently experiencing or will ever experience in the future. Some of you know, in my role as pastor, when I meet with people and I see or hear a spirit of discouragement or depression or defeat, I have come to ask them, hey, will you tell me about your friends? Because if you show me your support network and how you are encouraging them, I can tell you a lot about your life. It's almost as if you don't choose your life, you choose your friends, and then you'll have your life. I'm saying if you want to have great character, surround yourself with people of great character. If you want to take great risks, surround yourself with risk takers. If you want more faith, surround yourself with people of great faith. If you want more wisdom, surround yourself with people who are wise. Don't go it alone. Don't go it alone. Find the right people. Share your journey. I'm saying, friends, over the next 61 days, don't do it alone. And if you say, hey, David, good news, I'm not. I'm all set. Then let me ask you, will you please reach out to somebody else who is going it alone? Friends, this is the heart of what Jesus wanted for the church. This is part of why at TNC, we do Zoom groups, and we're having a s'mores night in the church parking lot, and we're meeting outdoors socially distanced each Sunday morning. Now, contrast downstream community with upstream community. The downstreamer has a very small social network, rarely makes calls or gets calls, rarely encourages or gets encouraged, rarely celebrates or gets celebrated. But upstream folks have friends to lean on and to laugh with and to get real wisdom from and to share highs and lows and worship and learning and exercise and growth with. And if in January you feel like you're dealing with a bunch of downstream problems, if on January 1, 2021, you say, yikes, I feel more lonely, depressed, afraid, it will likely be because you tried to go it alone. And here's number four. The fourth thing you might say in 61 days if you're dealing with problems downstream. Number four, I wish I had at least taken a first step. I wish I had at least taken a first step. And what I'm saying is, your problems won't miraculously go away. If you stay downstream, problems will keep floating by. And so you'll have to take a step out of the water in order to move upstream. Some of you know the riddle. Five frogs are sitting on a log. Four decide to jump off. How many are left? Answer, five. Because there's a difference between deciding and doing. And what I'm saying is, in the words of T.D. Jakes, that there is a tree inside that seed, but you're going to have to plant the seed. So first, make the first payment. Make the first appointment. Read the first chapter. Join a Zoom group for the first time. Fill out and send one resume. Get down on your knees and surrender one grudge. Walk 1 mile. Make the first generous donation. Because in the wisdom of Gretchen Rubin, it's enough to begin. And starting is often harder than continuing. In fact, friends, you should never wait for motivation to start. Because motivation is not going to strike you like lightning. In fact, motivation is actually a trap. Forget motivation and just take the first step today. Begin now. And then watch what happens. Because motivation will actually often come after you've taken the first step. Because it'll get easier and easier and easier to do the right thing the next time. Now, contrast downstreamers with upstreamers on this. The downstreamer is still trying to rescue one drowning issue after the other. But the upstreamer has already taken a step or two, has made one deposit into their savings or two or three, has lost 1 pound or two or three, has one or two ideas in the mix. And I'm just saying, take a step today. Don't wait to shift your attentions. Don't wait to be generous. Don't wait to connect with spiritual community. Because if in January you feel like you're dealing with a bunch of downstream problems, if on January 1, 2021, you say, yikes, I feel behind the eight ball in so many areas, it will likely be because you never took a first step upstream. Where are you going? You shout. Your friend answers, I'm going upstream to tackle the guy who's throwing these kids in the water. Let's pray. God, we resonate with the psalmist who said, this is the day that you have made. Therefore, we will be glad and rejoice in it. God, I pray that we will pay attention to your intentions in the days ahead. God, I pray that we will be generous in the days ahead. I pray that we will love each other well and prioritize unity and community and grace in the days ahead. And I pray that we will take a first step today. Amen.